Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, June 10th. I'm Ray Graff. Hey, it's birds today. Rich Guthrie is on the line to answer your birding questions. If you do have a birding question, give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Or you can email us, as a couple of people already have. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Always great fun when Rich Guthrie is on the line, and he is on the line today to answer your birding questions. And we'll be back after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's birds today. Rich Guthrie is here. He's like a 40s-era Frank Sinatra version of the birding icon. The calls just come flowing in. People swoon. We have a billion emails here already. Rich is retired from the New York State DEC. He's board member of the State Ornithological Association and the regional reviewer for the premier birding site, eBird. He is a birding superstar. Just trust me on this. 800-348-2551 if you have a question about birds, and who doesn't? 800-348-2551 or email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Ladies and gentlemen, now I introduce you to the very famous, lovely, and talented Rich Guthrie. Rich, welcome back to the show.
Ray, I don't know where to begin after all that. Hi.
I'm telling you, man, we got a stack of emails here. We got the phones loading up. You're so
all right.
You're so hot. You're like the Pope. You're very popular. What's happening, man? How are you?
Bring them on. Yeah, Ray, I'm great. How are you today?
You know, about the same. It could be.
I know. Yeah. I know. I sure would love to be there looking, watching your smiling face as the phone calls come in. But
really? When's the last time one saw me smile?
That's right. I must have the wrong number.
Exactly. All right. Yeah. Let's go right to the emails, and then we'll jump on the phones. This one's from
go
Ellen.
Ahead.
Ellen says, I know almost nothing about birds, but do recognize the song of the warbling vireo because it's also my phone ringtone. My question is about their habits. I've had one or more in a small wooded area near our house for over a month. I've never noticed another bird species to hang out like that. How long is the mating breeding period, and is that what is keeping them here?
The answer is, it's the male warbling vireo that's doing all the singing. So it must be that you have more than one male in that territorial area.
Yeah.
And vireos, by the way, get their name. It's a derivative of the Latin for green. I am green.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what they are. I mean, they're not really green, not like Kelly green or maple leaf green, but they are green.
Okay.
And makes them very hard to see up there where they live in the canopy of the trees.
Okay.
But they have a beautiful, beautiful song. It's very complex when you break it down into components, but they have a wonderful identifiable song. In fact, there's a mnemonic for it that I grew up listening to people repeating, and it sounds like this. It sounds like it's saying, of course, we put these words onto these bird songs to make them recognizable.
Sure.
And to remember them. And it sounds like it's saying, I'm going to catch you when I do, I'm going to squeeze you into your squirt.
I beg your pardon?
Yeah.
All right. You know what? Let's just move on to the next one. All right. Thank you, Rich. This is from Pamela in Troy. And Pamela sent a picture, which I forwarded to you before the show. She writes, this little peep has appeared at my feeder a couple of times lately. I'm worried about it. He just sits on the tray for 10 or 15 minutes at a time, occasionally taking a peck at the seeds. Doesn't look well. Is there anything I can do for him? A bird rehabber who could catch and treat him? The flock, a couple of dozen goldfinches, which mobbed my feeders for most of May, seems to have evaporated. I'm back to my usual handful of goldfinches visiting the Birdie Cafe. I've never had that many that consistently before. Now it seems odd without them. And that's from Pamela in Troy.
Well, you know, a couple of things come to mind. First of all, with regard to the numbers of goldfinches, they've been around in incredible numbers this year, out of the ordinary. There's been lots and lots and lots of them showing up at people's backyard feeders throughout the Northeast. And it's wonderful. They're beautiful, beautiful birds. However, this poor guy, and I, Ray, you sent me a photograph of it so that I could recognize it and see.
Yeah.
This poor guy is suffering a real problem.
What?
It appears to have caught a very highly contagious eye disease that is just not good.
How do you know that from the picture?
I can, and the behavior. This is what happens. They become sickly looking. They become lethargic. They become confused and disoriented because this eye disease brings on blindness. And not blindness itself, but the crusting around the eyelids.
So this is conjunctivitis.
Conjunctivitis, yeah. Right. Now, there is a website. You can go to New York State, and I'm sure I know in Massachusetts and Connecticut as well, there is a site where you can find wildlife rehabilitators near you. And just go to New York, dec.newyork.gov,
mm-hmm.
and look for licensed wildlife rehabilitators.
Okay.
And then from there, you can find somebody nearby that you can contact and ask. Now, I will say that many rehabilitators are very reluctant to bring on some of these finches that have this conjunctivitis because they don't want to infect the other birds that they're caring for.
Now, if you're a human and you get conjunctivitis, you take what? Antibiotics?
Yeah, some sort of antibiotics, and they apply it directly, and it could work. But it's very complex. You have to have the bird in the hand and in your care first. So, but the one thing to do right now is to take the bird feeders down because you don't want to spread it to any other birds that are coming to the feeder.
Yeah. Okay.
You need to take the bird feeder down and give it a good wipe down with disinfectant and let it air dry and hold it out for a little while before you put it back up again. If it's possible to catch this bird, and it could be because they really don't have a good flight mechanism working. But first contact a wildlife rehabilitator and see if you can find a repository for it so that they can work on the cure.
All right. Rich Guthrie is our guest today. It's Birds on Vox Pop, 800-348-2551. And we will get to the phones after two more emails and a quick break. This email came in from Dawn in Skodak Landing. For several years, we've had wrens in our small birdhouse. This year, a pair of bluebirds started hanging around and keep trying to get into the house, although the wrens have a nest built in it. The bluebirds are too big to get through the hole, but are relentless in trying. The wrens don't seem terribly upset, but we'll try chasing the bluebirds. Just wondering about this turf war. We have a bluebird house on the property that was occupied by tree swallows, but then we began to see bluebirds at that house, too. Goodness, I guess we need a hotel. And that's from Dawn in Skodak Landing.
Well, Dawn, you're so fortunate to have those three species trying to nest in your wonderful backyard habitat. What I would recommend is, put another house up, one for each. The wrens are very tenacious when it comes to their nest sites, and if the hole is too small for the bluebirds, it's just not going to work for them.
Right.
So it needs to be the same size, an inch and a half in diameter for the entry hole, and side by side with the tree swallow, and they should get along fine.
All right, this one is from Natalie, and then we will take a quick break, and then we will come to the phones. Natalie writes, we have a sapsucker that is killing one of our trees. Though we enjoy watching all the woodpeckers that are taking advantage of the sapsucker's work, how do we discourage it? And that's from Natalie.
Well, Natalie, the sapsucker is a type of woodpecker that lives up to its name. Well, partly. It really doesn't suck the sap of a tree, but just punctures a tree, and then the sap will ooze out, and the sapsucker will go and lap it up. So it might be called a sap lapper. And then they come back, and they feed on any insects that are drawn to it. You know, the sweetness of the sap will draw flies and ants and what have you, and that's just dessert for the sapsucker. It won't really harm the tree. Trees get over that. They get over it quickly. It's been going on for millennia, and the trees will just heal over. They'll just scar over that little puncture and move on. But if you really do want to get rid of it, just put some burlap around the parts of the tree where the sapsucker seems to be working, and that should help.
All right. Before we hit the break here, what is it the male vireo sings again?
I'm going to catch you when I do. I'm going to squeeze you to a squirt.
All right. On that happy note, let's take a break. Rich Guthrie is our guest. 800-348-2551. Oh, there's a long, long way to go. But I'm sure we'll get through it. We'll be back. Fox Pop on WAMC, 800-348-2551 is our telephone number, 1-800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is our guest today, and let's go right to the phones. Rick in Stockbridge. Rick, you're on.
Ray and Rich, how are you guys doing today?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing really good. I'm out in the woods hiking, so I'm doing good. Excellent. But Rich, I wanted to tell you the story that happened to me last summer. And I'm a singer, and I can't practice in my apartment. Well, I could, but I'm not sure my neighbors are like it. A lot of times when I'm hiking in the woods, I practice singing when I know nobody's around. And this one time I was hiking Monument Mountain. I'm coming down the woods, and I'm singing, and 150 feet in front of me in the path, I see a great horned owl cross the path and fly into the woods. And I kept singing, and when I got to about where he was, I looked to my right. He's flying right at me. And he lands in this tree no more than 15 feet away from me, maybe 12 feet on a branch up in the air. And I sang to him for like 10 minutes, and then I talked to him for a couple of minutes and then said goodbye to him, have a nice day, and it was just an awesome experience seeing him. I mean, just a fantastic-looking bird.
Was that common, Rich?
Well, I think a lot might depend on the song you were singing at the time.
Really? What song was it?
You know, I was actually singing Eleanor Rigby, which I found, I've done this 6 times, I found that if you sing the Eleanor Rigby and walk at a steady pace, you can walk right up to deer.
Oh, come on.
Well, there you go.
And I did that.
Yeah. And great horned owls.
I mean, it was just amazing, the great horned owl. I mean, just what beautiful bird, and seeing it close.
I'm going to have to try that. I need to get the words to Eleanor Rigby down and then give that a try.
Yeah, you know,
definitely in the deeper woods.
Go ahead. Somebody.
Yeah, I mean, real quickly, the first time I did it, I saw these 26 or so female deer, maybe 150 yards in front of me, and they saw me, and I'm singing Eleanor Rigby. When I stopped, I was in the middle of these deer. I was passing deer like 3 feet away from me.
Really?
When I stopped singing, yeah, and I've done this like this other time, this big buck, I saw him, I walked up to him. When I stopped, I was 15 feet away from him.
Yikes.
I just talked to him for a few minutes, and he kind of – I've done it 6 times. It's like pretty amazing.
Now, peyote is not involved at all with this, right, Rick? Is that right?
Say that again?
No peyote involved with this experience, right? Are we good?
No. Since this shutdown, I have more friends who are animals. Like, there's this pond I go to, and every time I go there in the morning for my coffee, I have this goose that he sees me on the other side of the pond. He'll fly over to me. He comes out of land. We hang out. He'll be like a couple feet away from me as I'm sitting on the grass.
Sounds like you got a fan club out there.
That's cool, Rick. Thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551 is the number. I don't know, Rich, when I sing, most wildlife run away. It's very strange.
Well, try Eleanor Rigby. See what happens.
Oh, look at all the lonely people. Susan and Amherst. Susan, you're on.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
I have a rather uplifting story I'd like to share with you, an experience that my husband and I had while vacationing at Cape Cod. We'd been hiking for a while, and we emerged from the woods onto a bike path, and we just stopped to catch our breath, and across the bike path at the edge of the woods over there was a catbird doing its typical chattering, non-melodic, squeaky song, which I'll try to do a little of. Something like that.
Sounds good.
I had recently read that catbirds are mimics, so I whistled my rendition, rather feebly, I must admit, of a white-throated sparrow song. And to my amazement, the catbird sang the same somewhat feeble song back to me. And then my husband, who is a much better whistler than I am, whistled the song better. And this time, the catbird repeated the song just like my husband's better version.
Huh.
It was exhilarating, and I just wanted to share that with Rich.
Well, that's wonderful.
Listening.
Yeah, catbirds are one of my favorite birds. They're very, I don't want to say bold or brazen, but they are very attentive and are not shy. So you can if you earn a trust or look trustworthy to a catbird, they will be right near you, and they can be a good buddy for a little while.
Oh, that's good to know. We have them in our yard.
Yeah, and they're good to have. They're good to have around. They're good bug eaters.
Okay. Oh, thanks. Susan, thanks a lot for the call.
Terrific.
Have a great day.
That's great.
I got to tell you, Rich, this is already a weird program. And am I entering a fugue state? Am I actually here? Let's try Peter in Poughkeepsie. Peter, are you there?
Yes.
Hello.
I have a question. Why do chickens and other domesticated animals lay an egg once a day, but wild birds, hawks, robins, only a couple times a year?
Well, that's a good question. And chickens and have been domesticated for so long, they've given up their real wild ways. And aside from that, you know, that's a good question. And I'm going to ask my friends over there at the Science Project when they come on what might be the mechanism behind that. I don't know the answer to that, by the way.
Hmm.
But now you got me wondering, and I am going to go look it up. Why do the chickens lay eggs one a day for an extended period of time, where wild relatives of theirs, the pheasant, the turkey, the quail, will lay a clutch of eggs all at once, and then they're done for that year?
Very interesting. I don't know. All right, Peter.
That's a good question.
Thanks a lot, and Rich will research that one. Over to Lucas in Port Ewing. Lucas, you're up.
Hi, how you doing? Two quick questions. I had a huge, probably 600-pound bear in my backyard yesterday. Okay,
mm-hmm.
not a nice thing to see in the middle of the day. I think he was going or she was going after the bird feeder. So my first question is, any way to prevent that? And then the second question, just quickly, I have a hawk nest in my front yard, and I just want to know how to tell the difference between a harriet and a hawk. And it's a white hawk on the belly. It's got a white and kind of brownish dots, and it's really full of feathers. It almost looks like an owl, but it's not, and it keeps on getting chased by blue jays.
Okay.
That's all. Thank you guys so much for this.
Sure, you bet. You going to hang on the line, or you want to hang up?
Yeah, I'm hanging on.
All right, man.
Okay, good. The question number one, take down the feeders. You don't want that bear to be comfortable and looking for more.
Yeah.
Definitely. Anybody who's got a feeder out there where there's any indication or potential for a bear, Got to stop.
Yeah.
Can't do that. The second question, a harrier, not likely. A harrier nests on the ground in wide open spaces where it can see the horizon without trees for the most part. The hawk that you may have could be one of a number of different hawks. That it nests that close to you is kind of unusual, but in the hawk world, they are doing so well out there in the last few years. They've occupied just about every available nest site that suits them, and then they have to go and find some places that they would have passed over first off. So they're becoming a little more acclimated to being around people, and that's probably what you have there. Now, the hawk you described sounds like it's probably a red-tailed hawk, but I can't say for certain without having seen it. The other hawk that likes to nest in backyards or nearby is the red-shouldered hawk, but they have a rusty red coloration on the breast.
Mm.
But they, both of those are good backyard neighbors.
All right, Lucas, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is our guest. It's Birds Today, and Barbara is in Saratoga. Barbara.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Rich.
Hi.
Hi, Ray.
Hello.
I'm calling because I don't have a good story to tell you.
Ah.
I just have a question regarding our insect population. Over the past few years, I've noticed just here in Saratoga, on one of our porches where we usually have a slew of fireflies and then ladybugs on the window, you know, as the weather starts to warm up. No insects almost very few, just a handful, now show up on that porch, which is facing south. And I know that for a fact it's been documented that the insect population is dropping in countries like Germany. And this is terrible news for our bird population and other animals.
It most certainly is. And what you're saying is a very astute observation, and it is happening. Now, you can tell, we can tell that simply by driving the highway at night. Back in the day, when you got home after a ride for a few miles out in the country roads, you get back home and your windshield was full of remnants of bugs that have hit the windshield that were just running into driving down the highway.
Yeah.
We don't see that anymore. It's it's kind of like a mixed blessing for the driver. You don't have to scrape those things off the windshield. But on the other hand, that is a indicator that our insect population has decimated. And the number one influence there will be lawn pesticides. Mm-hmm. That's my take on that. Is lawn pesticides, not necessarily you, but the neighbors down the road or around the corner or throughout the city, spraying for mosquitoes that will have an effect, an expanding effect on the insect population.
Yeah.
And the end result is less food for the bird population and other animals, as you point out.
Well, Barbara, thank you. Go ahead, Rich. Finish it up.
Oh, so there is a definite decline in the number of insects and a subsequent decline in the number of songbirds that rely on insects as their mass feeding source.
All right, Barbara, thank you. And now we go to Joanne, who is in New Jersey. Where are you in New Jersey?
Booton, northern New Jersey.
Well, very nice to have you on the program. You're on with Rich Guthrie.
Hi, thanks. I'm new to birding, but since lockdown, I've been taking a lot more walks and learning, hearing a lot more birds, and was wondering where is a good place for the neophyte start learning bird songs. I mean, I have several apps on my various devices, but they're all there is no Shazam for bird songs that I've found, and was wondering where I might start.
Well, I would, if you haven't found it, try going to Cornell University's All About Birds website. That's a good tutorial about bird songs and identification of the different songbirds and their vocalizations, both songs and calls, which are different. And then there's another one that goes back some years, and which I really, really like. And that's was back in the day, I'm coming from there, is a cassette. And then it went to CDs, and I don't know what format it may be.
What, you didn't have an 8-track?
Probably. Well, I don't know. That's pretty sophisticated for my.
All right.
Anyway, it's birding by ear. And what I like about that is it starts out with the simple songs and compares one against the other. The robin, the grosbeak, the tanager, and the light. They have similarities between them, and you compare them and learn from that. The chipping songs, the worm-eating warbler, the chipping sparrow, the junco, and the light. They have a similar song but different, and you could learn those from that. Mm. And Birding by Ear, it's a wonderful series. I hope it's still out there somewhere.
Joanne mentioned Shazam, which is, Rich, I don't know. Do you know what that is?
Sure I do.
Okay, so that would be a great thing if you could come up with something that would mimic the, would understand the patterns and give you at least a reasonably assured answer as to what the bird is.
There's an app for that.
There is an app for that.
And you could put it on your iPhone, your phone, and hold it up and listen to the bird sing and punch it in and see what happens.
Well, why don't you tell her what it is?
It's called Song Sleuth. Let me make sure I have that correct. Song
Ooh,
Sleuth.
Awesome.
Okay.
Awesome is right. It is called Song Sleuth. S-L-E-U-T-H.
All right.
And it is an app.
Oh, my.
But here's the caution. Part of the fun is some of the hilarious misidentification that thing comes up with. So you can have, you know, it didn't even sound anything like that. But it'll put you in the right direction, and maybe down the menu of choices will be the right one.
Well, Joanne, thank you very much for calling, and welcome to the program. Welcome to birding. Rich Guthrie is our
guest.
Thank
you. Coming from New Jersey, yes.
Yeah, very cool. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Lines are predictably loaded, and let's go to Mary Lou in Red Hook. Mary Lou.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I, like the woman before me, have never really done any birding or anything. But again, I guess because I have been in the house, I have seen a red-winged blackbird, which is like an incredible color. I mean, just an incredible color.
Yeah. You're right about that.
I'm wondering, because we just moved into this house, is there any food that they particularly like that I could get for them?
Well, they do. Usually, red-winged blackbirds are a beautiful bird. They live up to their name. They're a black bird with a bright red patch on the wing.
Exactly.
And what they like you to offer best is cracked corn. Just simply cracked corn. On a platform feeder, and you've won their heart.
Okay. That would be great. Thank you.
Yes, and while you're in the Red Hook area, I might suggest you check out the Ralph Waterman Bird Club in Dutchess County, because there you will learn a lot more, as well as others listening, by going to their local Audubon chapter or their bird club. Check it out.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Mary Lou. Rich Guthrie is our guest today. 800-348-2551, the number. And Bill in North Adams. Bill, you're on with Rich.
Hey, how you doing? Thanks, Ray. Appreciate it. Hey, Rich. As both indoor cat lover and a bird lover, I thought I'd discuss a little product I saw on Amazon. I'm going to order this week. It's called the Cat Bib. And it, people that have used it say it's at least 50% preventative in cats killing birds and mammals. And I thought I'd share that with you and Rich today, Ray, because I know you're a cat lover, and I am too, but people do not realize that cats are invasive species. They're from Europe or Asia or Africa, and they do a destructive amount of harm on our native wildlife, from chipmunks to butterflies.
Okay.
It's called the cat bib. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Rich. Go ahead.
I want you to include me with you and Ray about being a cat lover.
Okay. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Rich.
I'm in there with you. I love cats indoors. But go ahead. What was the name of this again?
It's called Cat Bib. Capital C-A-T, capital B-I-B. You look at it. They had a recent study confirming a lot of it at some university. It's right on Amazon, though. It confirmed it reduces the number they do kill. It doesn't affect them preying on reptiles, but we'll take this for what it is, you know?
Yeah.
I've seen that out there, and that's very nice. Anything to help reduce the casualties. Yeah, I'm with you there.
All right, Bill, thanks a lot for that one. And let's grab one more before our next break. It's Charles in Amherst. Charles.
Yes, please. The other day I found a cedar waxwing that was dead. And I wonder, isn't there some place you're supposed to report dead birds?
Well, so they can yes and no. It depends on the cause of. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I don't know, of course. I mean, the bird appears to be intact. But.
Yeah. It depends on what might be the suspect cause of the deaths. If it's an auto collision, that's, you know, unfortunate, that's one thing. If it's a window collision, there's, you know, unfortunately, there's quite a few of those. What I would do is a local university or state wildlife department or museum in the Albany area, the New York State Museum, or actually New York wide, Connecticut or Massachusetts, a similar repository might be the appropriate. And a lot depends on the species. You know, sometimes the suspect cause of death. In New York, I like to refer things to the state pathologist to see if there is any kind of pathological issue that might be involved here. But usually it's unfortunate that these things happen. And the university or museum might be the appropriate place.
All right, Charles, we got to take a break here. Rich Guthrie is our guest. 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number. We'll sift through the email, and we'll also see if there's anything going on Rich wants to talk about, and then we'll get back to the phones. Someday we really ought to try a 12-hour Rich Guthrie show. I'll bet you we would have fully loaded phone lines the entire... You want to try that sometime, Rich? 12 hours?
Let's go for call a marathon. Marathon box pop.
Guthrie Fest 2020. What do you think?
Well, I think... Hey, Ray, I was hoping to hear a little bit of Eleanor Rigby while we were in that break.
You know, we had a funny... I'm going to read the emails in a minute. We had a funny email from, let's see, somebody named Paul. Says, I've tried singing Eleanor Rigby while approaching human females. Doesn't work. There you go. All right. So, any events coming up before we check our email box?
Not many, Ray.
Okay.
Not many. We're still on a bit of a shutdown. But here's a couple I want to bring up. First of all, reiterate something I mentioned earlier, and that is contact a local birding organization for activities that may be going on or may be ready to start up again. And get out there with the crowd when the crowdsourcing permits. Now, a couple of things. The Hudson River Audubon Society is actually bringing the outdoors inside with a virtual members night. That will be Wednesday, the 24th. Mm. Is that correct?
I don't know.
At 7:30 in the evening. It'll be a Zoom meeting, but what you want to do is go to the HRAS.org, Hudson River Audubon Society.org.
Cool.
And check out their membership thing. Be a member. Join in their members' night for a virtual members' night tour.
Neato.
A birding walk.
Oh, that's great. All right.
And then you can join with the Bedford Audubon Society.
Mm-hmm.
Tate Johnson will be doing a virtual bird walk, and that's tomorrow night, tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock in tomorrow morning.
Really?
That's bedfordaudubon.org.
All right, very good. And, of course, you know, as we hit phase three, phase four, we're going to have more outdoor events again.
You betcha.
And things you'll have more things to talk about at the 20 or 40 break. This email came in from Mike quite a while ago, and I forgot to read it. Mike writes, I live in downtown Saratoga. For the first time in over 20 years, I see a pair of catbirds nesting in our front yard. We have always had blue jays, cardinals nest in the trees, even Carolina wrens at our nest box, but never catbirds nesting in our trees. Is this unusual?
No. And it's new for you, but it's if you have the right setup in your backyard, you can have catbirds nesting. What they like is a dense shrub and a little bit of privacy. So they will be looking for some place where they can hide, you know, getting in there where they can tuck their nest in there and remain inconspicuous for a long period of time. But so I suspect it probably has something to do with your trimming of the shrubbery in the yard, maybe earlier this year that enabled it to grow a little denser and maybe left alone for a little while where they said, looks good to me. Now, the trick is to leave it alone, let them brood out their young for this year and be happy with catbird songs.
All right. I will read four more. We have about 20 more emails. I will read four more, and then we will go to as many calls as we can. This one is from Joshua in Walden. Subject heading, bird dead at feeder. I recently established a feeder, and the day after I broke out the sunflower seeds, I saw the local groundhog feasting at its base. That afternoon, I found a dead wren on the ground under the feeder. It appeared to have a wound on its neck extending to the eye. I suspect the groundhog assassinated this bird in its gluttonous fervor. Is this plausible? Any other explanation? Should I buy the dynamite already? And that's from Joshua.
No, not likely.
No?
No. The groundhog or woodchuck is really not that interested. I think they were probably will snag a protein meal if they can get it.
Yeah.
and you know, opportunity knocks, but they're not going to be aggressively pursuing.
Okay.
A wren. A wren is pretty agile and should be able to get out of the way of a clunkety old groundhog.
Okay.
So I don't know what might have caused the demise for that wren beneath the feeder.
All right.
It's unusual that they're coming to a feeder in the first place. They're not much of a feeder bird.
All right, Joshua, then hold off on the dynamite, my friend. This one is from Dane. I've had a Phoebe nesting on a light fixture every year for the past 3 years. Is it the same Phoebe, or is it offspring using the same nesting site?
Good question. And the answer could be either one.
Okay.
The likelihood is that, well, you have successive generations of Phoebes coming back. They come back to where they were born, or the adults will come back to where they had success the year before.
Yeah.
So they know the spot, they like the spot, they will come back again. If all of them come back at the same time, let's say mom and pop and the four kids come back at the same time next year, the four kids will be booted out, and mom and pop will reestablish their old territory.
Huh.
And if it happens to be the kids, the siblings, and they attract another Phoebe in, there you go.
You got a
new brood.
All right, this one's from Kathy in Glenville. In early May, I had orioles at my feeders for the first time in 20 years. I immediately placed orange halves at my feeders, and they really enjoyed them. They were here for a total of 5 days and then seemed to disappear. Will they come back?
Nah, not likely. It's possible. That's typical of the way orioles behave when they come back in the spring. They come in, they love those oranges, but it takes only a special group of orioles to like those oranges. They have to know
right.
that those oranges are good for them.
Okay.
They have to have learned that someplace. And the school for that is down in Florida and Texas and down in Central South America where the orioles spend the winter. Now, folks down there will slice an orange in half and put it out, and the orioles, one by one, watch the others, and they learn, easy pickings.
Amazing.
When they come back here, if you put an orange out, they will eat it. Not all of them will, because they haven't been to that school. Then orioles will retreat to the woods and get back to their own natural haunts to nest and raise their young, and may or may not come back to that orange.
All right, let's see one more email, and we'll try to keep it quick, and then we'll have about 10 minutes. We'll go to as many calls as we can. This one's from Larry. Larry says, I photographed a leucistic hawk at Rockefeller State Park the day after your show last time. Wanted to know how I can identify what it is based on the size and the bend of the wing. I think it's a red tail, but it could be a Cooper's hawk. Any help on this?
Yeah, it's a red tail.
How do you know?
I don't. I can tell.
From the email?
Yes, of course. Well, here's what we have. Red-tailed hawks are prone for this curious leucism where they where you'll have the white individual show up in the crowd.
Yeah.
And they're beautiful, beautiful birds. And it just simply and it's rare, but it is there.
Right.
Cooper's hawk, not quite so much. If you got a picture, shoot it off to me. I'll be glad to see it. And Rockefeller State Park down in the Hudson River Valley, I'm sure that the folks at the Hudson River Audubon Society will be happy to know about that.
Okay, and your email address, Rich?
My name, Richard P. Guthrie at gmail.com.
All right, let's go into the lightning round here on the phones. Marion Poughkeepsie, you're up.
Hi there.
Hi.
So I just wanted to add to the singing stories that I am also a singer, and very recently I went and was singing near a pond that has some known beaver activity, but a beaver came right up to the shoreline and hung out with me while I was singing. It was not Eleanor Rigby. It was John Denver's Rhymes and Reasons.
Oh, beavers love that. Yes, that's true.
Well, there you go.
That's,
I think I'll stick with Eleanor Rigby
and
with
I'll
the owls.
And I'll also say, I have no idea what kind of birds there are, but they're two small birds that have taken up nesting. I don't know that they're nesting, but hanging out on my front porch. One hangs out on top of a light fixture. One hangs out on top of the door lintel. They'll let us get very close to them, but we haven't photographed them. And there doesn't seem to be a nest. They just seem to like to hang out at night.
Wow.
No idea what they are. So.
Well, good for you for the trustworthiness that they've learned and you've earned.
Hmm.
There are a number of birds that will use a porch for night roost. I suggest perhaps a Carolina wren or the Phoebe.
Okay.
But I'm going to go with the Carolina wren. And what they like about back porches is the spiders that are drawn to any lights or things like that. And they know that there's an easy meal there.
Okay. Mary, we got to go here.
Well, there definitely are some of those. So, okay. Hey, thank you very much.
Thank you. And thank you. Keep singing to those beavers. Let's go to Alice in Slingerlands. Alice, you're on.
Oh, hello.
Hi.
I'm practically falling asleep waiting for you.
You and me both.
Oh, no.
Go ahead.
Maybe I should start singing to keep you awake.
I hope so. I have a question about New York State law and bird feeders in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of years ago, I live in an apartment. The woman below me had a bird feeder up, and one morning I looked out, and the whole thing had been pulled to the ground. And I thought, what happened there? And I called the police department, and they said that it probably was a bear, and the New York State law says you should not feed the birds in the summer at a feeder just because of the bears.
Huh.
Is that true?
Everywhere in New York?
You ever?
I will
outside Albany.
I'll have to look at that. I know it's illegal to feed, to put food out for bears, and it's illegal to put out food out for deer.
Yes, it is.
But I don't know if that extends generically to bird feeders in general. What I will do is I'll have to check on that.
Okay, that's good homework for next show.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. And if all else fails, put the hummingbird feeder out there. You should have no trouble.
Oh,
right.
I've got a hummingbird feeder. And he came before Mother's Day this year. Usually they come on Mother's Day.
Mm-hmm.
What I put out there was up a little bit too long, and they didn't like it. So I took the feeder down. And then one day I looked out, and here he was in front of my sliding door to the deck, flapping his wings, saying,
Where's the food? Yeah, there you go. Hey, Alice, thanks a lot. I appreciate the call. Over to Steve in Plainfield. Steve, you're on with Rich Guthrie.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. So we're on a 40-acre pond in northwestern Massachusetts, and recently got into birding because when we bought the house, we saw eagles. We got excited, and earlier this year, we saw common mergansers that we thought were loons at first, and we've seen osprey as well. But more recently, a bird came flying in, dove into the water, and then started diving, and I thought maybe it's a loon, but I could tell by its back and feathers that it wasn't. And we look at our Sibley book, and we can't really figure it out. Closest thing is some kind of cormorant, maybe. There's a rock that sticks up out of the water, and it will sit on that rock for an hour or two at a time. And another one, apparently the mate, flew up in a tree and sat up there a long while as well. Any ideas? It's supposedly dark with a lighter chest and an orangish kind of beak.
You got it. Your detective work paid off. What you got there is a cormorant. And a cormorant is mainly a seagoing bird about the size of a goose that nests upstate into Lake Champlain and Lake Ontario, Lake Erie areas. And they are fish-eating birds. They're related to the pelican. They have a special kind of like gripping hook at the tip of their bill that they use for grasping, holding on to fish that they dive. They swim in the water and dive for them. Cormorant. Good job.
All right, Steve. Thanks very much. Now to Jim in Adams, Massachusetts. Jim.
Yay, Ray.
Hey.
And Rich, how are you today?
Pretty darn good. Thank you.
All right. I've got a bird. I haven't been able to visually get an eye on it yet. Last couple of years up in the backyard of my house, and there's quite a bit of woods up in there and all the way to the base of Mount Greylock. But I just heard it recently singing again. Very melodic song, tone to it, and it goes tweet to tweet, tweet to tweet, and it'll go again tweet to tweet, tweet to tweet. Any ideas?
I'm going to suggest Carolina Wren. It sounds a little truncated for the Carolina Wren song, but they are very vibrant. They're very energetic. They like and they are persistent singers. The other possibility is Tufted Titmouse,
mm-hmm.
and there's your homework. You can compare the two of those and see what you come up with.
So Carolina Wren, Tufted Titmouse, one of the two. All right, Jim, we are moving along here very quickly, but thank you for that one. Kathy and Dutchess, Kathy.
Hi. I want to let you know I'm a cat lover, too, and my cats love watching the birds outside.
Yay.
And by the way, I have three bird feeders. And no bears that came there. A raccoon comes every once in a while, well, every night, but and he tries to get to one of them, but he really can't get to it. But the question is, there's two houses when I moved into this apartment, and there's two bird houses, and I haven't seen any birds go in there. So can I clean them out and let them live there, whoever wants to go in? Is there a reason why they don't go in there now?
I would suggest cleaning it out and see what happens.
You don't sound too optimistic.
One is right by my window, and one is in is hooked onto a tree, and I haven't seen any birds go in or out of them, and I'm wondering, like in the wintertime, you know, it's someplace for them to go. If I clean them out, I wonder if they would go in at least.
Not likely. The birds that use a house in the wintertime would be the bluebird. Overwintering bluebirds will find a shelter like that. And then it becomes a communal roost where five, six, even eight of them will gather up together.
Okay.
But
it's okay for me to clean them out?
Yes. Check to make sure it's not being used and then open it up. There may be something going on. It's like a mouse nest or something that they're not happy with.
Oh, Lord, that's the last thing I need. All right, thank you, guys. And I love listening to you guys. I try to catch you every time you're on.
Well, thank you.
I was listening to you, and I figured, you know what, let me give you a call and ask you that question.
When you're going
to
be the last one.
You guys have a great day.
Well, thanks a
lot,
Kathy.
Yeah, I feed the birds, the squirrels, the chipmunks, everybody I feed. It's funny. I love animals.
Do you sing?
Don't feed the bears.
Do you sing to them, Kathy?
No.
No?
Yes, I do, actually. The birds, there's a singing bird, and I sing right back to it. I whistle right back to it.
Yeah?
It's funny, like... It does it right back to me too. So I have all kinds of birds. I have to get a bird book to look up all these different birds that are coming there. It's
amazing. The local bird club will help you out a lot. And Ray, I checked it out. It is not illegal to keep a bird feeder going. It is illegal to intentionally feed a bear.
Ah, well, you know, I'm not going to be doing that.
If there's evidence of bears, you got to stop.
Hey, I got a quick question before we end the show. Well, you know, I drove my daughters. They've been cooped up for months, and they wanted to get out of the house. I drove them up to the northern part of Lake George a couple of days ago. We just took a drive. What's the biggest bird up there that you see around?
Probably the turkey vulture.
Oh,
and then
this
the
was,
bald eagle and the great blue heron.
This was bigger than, this was like 30-foot wingspan. I mean, this was huge. I mean, it was, I don't know.
Sounds like a Skyhawk.
All right.
Engine.
You know what? This was, I guess this was fun, right?
Yeah, definitely.
All right.
eBird.org and Slant for New Yorkers, Atlas, New York.
Hey, man, thanks a lot. Hopefully next time you'll be back in the studio with us. But thank you, Rich Guthrie. Support comes from Paul Smith's College for students pursuing degrees in environmental studies, recreation, science, forestry management, and more. Personalized education at the college's 14,000-acre lakeside campus, paulsmiths.edu. And the Linda, WAMC's Performing Arts Studio. Now, performances and events have been postponed or canceled. Details for future events at the Linda. .org. Once again, thanks to Rich Guthrie for being here today. Thank you for listening. Sorry we didn't get to your calls and emails. Rich is very, very popular. We'll do the 12-hour edition of the program at some point over someone's dead body, but I'm sure we'll do it. Zach Malloy is our engineer. Charlene Knight took the calls. Jackie Orchard's our producer. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow it's the Science Farm. Right now, stand by for 51%.